The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. Off the Shelf gives a voice to commercial service and product companies selling in the federal market. Roger speaks to members and government officials about procurement policy trends, innovations, and debates. Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Now your host, Roger Waldron.
Today, my guest on Off the Shelf is Larry Allen. Larry is the president of Allen Federal Business Partners here in Washington, D.C. And today we're going to take a overarching look at the federal procurement system and category management and GSA schedules and just what's going on out there. Get the pulse from someone who's close to the heart of federal
thanks for
procurement.
Having me on, right, Larry? thanks for having me on, Roger. It's actually great to be here. Looking forward to talking about some of the cutting-edge procurement issues today, and should be an entertaining hour for your listeners.
Oh, I'm looking forward to it. So, Larry, let's. I mentioned category management, and that's Ann Rung issued a memo transforming federal marketplace back in December of last year, December 4th, I believe, and talked a lot about category management and the role vision will play in the government buying more as one entity. Can you give us some of your thoughts of what's going on there?
Well, I think category management as a concept, Roger, is a good concept, and it certainly is one that's worth exploring. In one way, to look at category management, and Ann Rung, who's now the administrator of the Office of Federal Procurement Policy, is that this is a belated follow-on from way back in the days of the Clinton administration, where you had Steve Kelman at the Office of Federal Procurement Policy, and Steve's idea was, look, let's try everything and then winnow it down. Well, the try everything part, Roger, is certainly what came into being, but by the time the winnow it down part of the equation came into play, Steve was back at Harvard, and nobody's really picked it up since. So I kind of look at category management in one way as an ability to look and see, all right, over the intervening, 20 years, what's worked really well in different things like IT procurement, increasingly professional services procurement? What cadres inside the government do those things well? So from that perspective and from that exercise, you can see, look, category management is designed to try to get to best practices, which is a concept I think lots of people can get behind.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. It is about a friend. It seems, I mean, what we hear is the idea of like what works, what's not working. Category manager, category management, identify that for particular market sectors and see what you can accomplish. But another big piece of that too is data and the role of data in decision making.
At its core, Roger, category management, you're right, only works in terms of being a data collection method. How do you know that you are best in category? What are the benchmarks that you're measuring your performance against? Pricing, competition, value, levels of service, things of that nature. This administration has been particularly hungry for more data. It certainly is not exceptionally different from its predecessors, but they've kind of taken this whole data-driven desire to a new level, and category management at its core contemplates the collection of a whole lot of information, and you have to ask yourself, who's going to collect it, and then how is it going to be deciphered?
Right. Those are our big challenges, and I think who's going to collect it, I think one of the government seems to be pointing towards the contractors more often than not to say, please collect and report that data. And what are your thoughts on that? The aggregation of data, the cost of it. What are you hearing out there?
Well, certainly, I think you're absolutely right. The government believes that industry, i.e. government contractors, have a better ability to collect data already. They should know. We hear that term a lot from people in government, that contractors should already know what it is they're selling to the government. They should already have this data captured. And at a macro level, that may be accurate, but it certainly isn't captured in the way that the government would like to see it sliced and diced, which is in a very different way from how companies traditionally capture it. So there's a cost there. There's a cost that's going to have to be borne by somebody, whether it's the contractors that collect the data and then slice and dice it to make it acceptable for the government customer, or on the off chance that the government might just take the data in the manner that the companies collected in and slice it and dice it their own way. I'm not sure that's going to happen. But there is a cost to all of this data collection, and I'm not sure that that's getting full play, whether we're talking about category management, whether we're talking about GSA schedules, whatever we're talking about in terms of being able to analyze government spend. If somebody's going to be given the bill, then there has to be an acknowledgement that that bill is going to have to be paid.
Right. Well, you know, I guess one of the other issues that comes up here is that this is all data the government already has in its possession. And if it was that easy to for the government, for the industry to have it at its fingertips, you know, one could say, where's the government with regard to the management of its own data? Is that something you're hearing out
there? Well, I think that's a very fair point. The government, just like contractors, should have a very good idea of what it is they buy. Woe be it to the senior agency executive that has to go up to Capitol Hill and explain why they don't have a good handle on what it is they're buying. For example, we saw a story that just came out a couple of weeks ago. So they can't tell, government agencies can't tell how many contractor personnel are working in their agencies. So even though you would think that that would be a basic element that each agency would collect, you know, my little office on the fifth floor downtown has six contractor employees. Everybody keeps tab and you roll it all up. So just as industry has the selling data, the government should have the buying data. And intrinsically, you should think that the buying data should be kept in such a way that it's more useful for the government to get at things like good category management analysis.
Right. So that's a good introduction too. And I know last Friday, GSA held a public meeting on its transactional data reporting rule, proposed rule pilot for the GSA Schedules program. You were in attendance. I was there and I spoke. What were your impressions?
Well, I thought the public meeting, Roger, brought few surprises. Frankly, I think one of the moments that everybody ought to sit up and take note of was the comments that you made about how much the implementation of this proposed rule would cost industry. And other than that, it was kind of predictable to see who was in favor and who was opposed. The inspectors general from GSA and the VA believe that if you remove the price reductions clause from the schedules program, that innocents will be led to the slaughter, even though the government's own data show that price reduction clause enforcement is now only responsible for 3% of all price reductions. I think my own feeling is that that's probably a little bit high, but still 3%, it's hard to justify the cost of keeping a price reductions clause basis of award requirement for that type of return on investment. No private sector company would keep something with that low of a return, especially at what is likely an inflated level. Secondly, you're talking about a pretty small carrot and a pretty big stick when you're asking industry to collect information on all of their scheduled transactions. Again, on one level, do companies individually account for that? Sure, they have to in order to pay their industrial funding fee, if for no other reason. But that's all captured in a certain way, in a certain system that's really tailored to make that. And we all remember, if you've been around long enough anyway, when the industrial funding fee came into being, that companies had to invest in systems to collect that fee and remit it. And then when GSA changed the industrial funding fee from 1% to 0.75, there was a whole host of costs even just with that tweaking. So here we're talking about setting up an entirely new transactional data gathering system. I just think at its core, not only is it going to be extremely expensive, Roger, but ultimately I don't think it's going to give GSA or federal buyers a tool that they think they're getting.
Right. So, you know, Larry, we are up on the first break already. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about the public meeting. I want to ask you about the process, what you thought of the way it was set up. It was an interesting engagement and dialogue, and also a little bit, you know, what are the alternatives? Are there alternatives? My guest today is Larry Allen. He is the president of Allen Federal Business Partners, and you are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, my guest is Larry Allen. Larry is the president of Allen Federal Business Partners, and we're talking right now, we're talking GSA schedules and data reporting and the public meeting that was held last Friday around GSA's proposed transactional data reporting pilot. And you know, Larry, GSA is to be commended for having the meeting and holding and having a public dialogue. You know, as much as there are grave concerns in industry about the approach, GSA is to be commended for having that dialogue. And it was an interesting format with, you know, initial presentations by the government. Then the public speakers had an opportunity to speak. We followed up by Q&A, you know, for the speaker. So I had questions asked of me. As did the IG from the VA and from GSA. And it culminated with sort of a panel, quick panel discussion at the end of the day. It was a little different than ones I've done before. And I think the idea was to foster conversation. Yeah, how did you think it went?
Well, I agree with you, Roger. I think it was commendable of GSA to have the public meeting along with the extended comment period that they put forth for this proposed rule, certainly indicative both of the gravity and extent of the situation that they're contemplating in terms of the impact this change would have on all users and sellers in the GSA multiple award schedule arena. The format, I thought, was interesting because the government kind of gave itself the first and last words, yeah. Which is not entirely surprising, but you know, we had people who were going through, I think, a lot of the basics in the morning with an audience that probably was fairly well aware of those basics to begin with.
Yeah, pretty sophisticated group.
Yeah, right, and knowledgeable, and you know, people who've been in this business for a long time. You and I definitely saw a lot of familiar faces. So not sure that was, it was good, I guess, to get it and get it on the record, but it kind of left me wondering whether or not there's more moving behind the scenes that we're not seeing. I don't want to think that this proposal is a preordained conclusion. But I know that GSA is certainly working hard to sell it. And in their defense, look, if it was my project, I'd be working hard to sell it too. But right. I think that, you know, the real outcome of how useful the public meeting was and how useful the comment period will be to see just what GSA does with all the comments, not just from the public meeting, but from the written comments that come on the record. There certainly is going to be, I think, Roger, almost uniform opposition from industry, not just because of the cost. I think for a lot of it is whether or not this system, as contemplated, is going to enable buyers to do apples-to-apples comparisons, whether or not you're going to be able to make a sophisticated comparison based on variable labor rates, labor mixes, keeping in mind that services are the bulk of things bought through the schedules program. You know, one of the comments that I made to our friends at GSA was, boy, if I ran the zoo, I would forbid anybody on my team from talking about the OS3 office supply contract anymore, because it's just not a good analogy.
Yeah.
So, you know, we have to see how much GSA takes these comments to heart. Hopefully they will, and we'll end up with a constructive process that we'll not just look at this, but might look at some alternatives.
Right. So just one, I'm going to ask you what if you have any thoughts on alternatives. But first, just a observation picking up on what you said is, it was interesting you picked up on something that I thought about at the meeting, is at the end of the meeting, they asked all the speakers to come up and talk a little bit about what you learned from the meeting. And I learned, you know, from my perspective, there was a great discussion about the credit use of the credit card and data. And there's lots of data there, been collecting for two or three decades, and it's no, you know, has it ever been used for any, you know, business intelligence purpose by the government? It's an interesting presenter who talked about that in particular. But more to the point, the thing that sort of I would recommend for if GSA or a government entity does another one of those is that GSA also be up there and say, what did it learn from the conversation? That just as a, you know, all the speakers, whether they agree or disagree, you know, as part of the public process and, you know, being citizenship yes. and all that stuff come up, made comments. And it would have been great to hear some initial feedback from GSA about what it had learned or what observed from the meeting. That would just be my one recommendation for them for and if they use the same format in the future. Now, to alternatives, do you have any thoughts on what could be done?
Well, I think the idea of credit card data analysis is a good one. Certainly, you know, you and I have followed the purchase card program pretty much since its inception, Roger. And, you know, increasingly GSA has wanted to capture more concise usage data, and it does a good job of that. Now, another item I was thinking about, because look, inherently, as you've mentioned, this is supposed to be a pilot project. So it's looking at certain types of transactions through the schedules program, not all of them. You know, a healthy amount of scheduled transactions are done via GSA's own assisted acquisition services branch. That's particularly true, I would think, Roger, for the types of acquisitions you would want to test in a pilot, i.e., information technology solutions, professional services, not just straight commodity buys that are important. But look, that's not where the dollars are. The dollars are in IT and professional services. And to the extent that GSA's assisted acquisition services divisions have been conducting buys using the schedules program over the several years, they should have that data readily made.
Right. And they're, as you called it earlier, they're the internal buying data that the government already has in place.
Right.
Yeah. So final thoughts on this. We're getting close to the end of this particular segment. Any final thoughts with regard to the transactional data reporting rule? What's your prognostication? That's a big word for me. I just had to slow down and say that, Larry.
Well, certainly, I'll give you a hopeful prognostication, Roger, and that is that all of the comments are viewed and thoroughly reviewed, not just the ones on data collection, but on eliminating the trigger from the price reductions clause. And let's hopefully the GSA will keep in mind that change for the sake of change isn't always the best outcome. And if they come to a conclusion that they're better off starting another pilot idea fresh, that they can do that.
Okay. So, and the role of, I hate to even ask you this question, but this is a quick follow-up, but the role of what happens that we have a constitutional event here coming up in about 18 months?
There is that. I think that there's a lot to be said that this is part of the category management initiative for this administration, as we talked about at the top of the show, and that if you end up with a new administration, even if it doesn't necessarily change party hands, this isn't a partisan issue, but you're going to end up with a whole group of new players with their own priorities. And certainly, if I were somebody who is opposed to the idea of the pilot in its current form, I'd be looking at the play clock and seeing if I could push it out as far as I could.
Right, you're starting a little like Four Corners, like
exactly.
Dahl, right?
You're
a Carolina
offense.
Guy, aren't you? Right? So, all right. Well, Larry, we do have to take our next break, but when we come back, we'll be talking more to Larry Allen. He is the president of Allen Federal Business Partners, and when we come back, we'll talk a little bit about competition in the air for GSA and the number of IT contracts. There's some new IT GWACs rolling out at NASA and NIH, and Larry's going to give us a lowdown on those. You are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today, my guest is Larry Allen. Larry is the president of Allen Federal Business Partners. And when we took the break, I introduced the idea of Larry's giving us a lowdown on a couple key new key competitors for GSA and GSA's ITG WAC. Say one of them's the oldest, you know, the next generation of the oldest ITG WAC ever out there in history, NASA SOUP, and the other one is CIOCIS. Is that correct?
CIOCS. That's right.
CS. Okay, I got it right. So that's a new cloud computing procurement, or what is that for NIH?
CIOCS, Roger, is NIH's companion contract to its CIOSP3. That's a lot of alphabet soup. But generally, the way to look at it is CIOCS is the hardware contract companion. Whereas CIOSP3 is more total solutions, more
and cloud there, right?
Yeah, and more of a heads-up competitor, maybe with Alliant and things like that.
Okay, so what's the scoop here, Larry?
Well, I think the scoop is, Roger, that CIOCS awards came out within the last 10 days. 65 companies that were awarded this contract. This is supposed to be the follow-on to NIH's ECS3, yes, another acronym, contract.
My head's starting to hurt, Larry.
Yeah, that's right. But a lot of focus, I think, Roger, on health IT, as you might imagine, coming out of NIH. A lot of focus, again, on equipment with ancillary services meant to support those products. Certainly something that's been eagerly anticipated in the contractor community. ECS, the ECS program has always had its devotees and followers in government, not exclusively inside the Department of Health and Human Services, but it's had its followers. And I think NIH would really like to expand the reach of this contract. But we're working here in a very competitive landscape, as you mentioned. About 2 weeks prior to CIOCS, NASA came out with the most recent iteration of its SOUP awards. And for those who've been around way too long in government acquisition, SOUP used to stand for Scientific Engineering Workstation Program.
And I can Larry, you are an old guy.
Well, I can remember we wrote about that in its first iteration when it came out in 1990. And now SOUP, like the NIH contract, Roger, is almost a total pure product play. Very few services. NASA very explicit about not wanting to get into the systems integration solutions game. They want to keep things manageable. They feel like they have a manageable number of contracts. They have a limited scope in terms of the products that they will offer as opposed to a total solution. One of the features that SOUP has a little bit more than it's had in its previous iterations is a number of more small business awards. It's always had a small business component to it, Roger, but you know, listeners may remember that, look, the initial SOUP announcements came out before Christmas, and then there were a host of protests. NASA pulled all the awards back and just reissued the new awards within the past month. One of the net results of that was that there were a significant number of small businesses that were awarded almost like they were setting up a discrete small business program, although I don't believe they're being that formal. But still, NASA SOUP, like the NIH program, has its supporters. I think NASA has always been out and seen itself as a heads-up competitor with GSA's IT-70 program. Certainly the program managers at NASA want to be competitive and garner a good share of the federal IT spend. They have been at the core of some of the category management that we talked about at the top of the program for IT. So I would expect to see that program drive a good amount of business. For GSA, it means they've got some competition. Right as we're about to come into the traditional federal buying season. So if you're an IT-70 contractor, NASA SOUP contractor, or an NIH CIOCS contractor, you've got some either really good options if you're on two or more, or you've got some competition that you're going to have to be considering if you're just on one of those.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a great point. And you know, one of the questions I had of you, you know, we've got NIH, you got NASA, you got IT Schedule 70. For hardware, do we really need any more government contracts? Isn't contract duplication still, agencies still feel compelled to create their own vehicles?
Well, I think that's exactly right, Roger. I think we're seeing an oversupply of contracts, oversupply of vehicles. There's the feeling that if I'm not running my own vehicle, I'm giving up control to somebody else. I don't think that's accurate. These contracts don't work well for anybody if they don't work well
for that person, for that organization.
Fundamentally.
Yeah. Yep.
So, you know, whether or not you need to have everything recreated every time, I don't think so. That adds to the government's overhead. It adds to the cost. I know that there are a couple of contracts inside DOD that are getting a second look, as I think is appropriate, before the next generation of those contracts might come out. Simply because we have well-functioning product-based IT contracts with good competition, with very low usage fees for them. And this is a hallmark of what category management is supposed to be all about. Perfect opportunity to see if we can't cull the contracting herd a little bit and use the programs that work well and let the other ones go by the wayside.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, just a thought there too, is that, you know, NIH and NASA and, you know, the Alliant program, Schedule 70 is a little different, but that's been around for forever. But they have to go through a very rigorous business case analysis, and they have to be approved by OMB. And in contrast, you know, I know Dan Gordon put into place the business case planning process, but that doesn't seem to have had much impact in reducing the momentum towards ever more, you know, agency-wide contracts. It seems like there's a double standard there. If you do a government-wide one that's tried to leveraging and be efficient and, you know, economies of scale like NIH or like NASA, you got to go through all this rigorous process. If you're going to do your own thing, there's a process, but how much process really is it? Is that your impression?
It is, and I think that you're right. Dan Gordon started that, Roger, and Ann Rung currently sits in that chair. Definitely would like to see more of a rigorous process for those agency-specific indefinite delivery, indefinite quantity contracts. I think when you're looking at an acquisition workforce in government that is overworked and understaffed, you want to do the best type of spend and analysis that you can. Both of those things argue strongly that you need to not have as many contract vehicles as you have right now. And certainly, you've got some good coverage with some good competition, which you would want. And I think, you know, you have a lot of people in industry that would be happy not to have to spend bid and proposal dollars going after something that could be. They'd rather spend some of their BNP money on something that will be.
Right, that is like a real requirement at that order level. So, you know, sort of keeping the theme of duplication or efficiency, you know, GSA, professional services category management team has embarked on a professional services consolidation. What is that?
Well, this is an effort, Roger, to consolidate multiple award schedule contracts for professional services. That's right. Multiple into one professional services schedule. I think at the strategic level, this makes sense, particularly when you have an OASIS program at GSA that does a lot of the same things, albeit in a different part of the procurement world than the commercial item GSA schedule. But you want to have the ability, if you're an agency, to go to a company and say, look, I need professional services to do these four things. And it doesn't make sense to necessarily have to use four different contracts to do those four things. You want to have a consolidated professional services contract that can be competitive because of the variable nature of the services marketplace. So GSA is attempting to consolidate these. Their goal is to have the consolidation complete by the end of the current government fiscal year in September. Whether or not they get entirely there, that's a good goal. And I know that the team led by Tiffany Hickson out in Auburn, Washington, is working very hard on that. And just like their counterparts in the proposed rule we talked about, they've been very good at reaching out to industry and keeping up a dialogue.
Yes, absolutely. They've done a great job at that. Larry, we're up on our next break. So when we come back, we'll be talking more to Larry Allen. Larry is the president of Allen Federal Business Partners. And we'll talk a little EULAs now. We'll end up EULAs. What are those? You're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, my guest is Larry Allen. He is the president of Allen Federal Business Partners. And Larry, I teased at the last break, I teased EULAs. So what the heck is an EULA? Is that some sort of endangered species or what is that thing?
Not in this term, Roger, nor is it a farm implement. EULA, Enterprise User License Agreement. And if the listeners have never heard of them, you guarantee that they've seen them. They're also known as Terms of Service Agreements. They're the things that you're supposed to read on and click at the bottom. And most people just skip to the bottom and click. They are, in fact,
I'm one of those people.
Yeah, well, me too. You look at, what are you going to do, disagree with Sections 13C?
Right, exactly.
This is something that's been in play in GSA for at least the last 4 years in terms of what commercial licensing agreements for software contain in terms of what is expected and allowable in the commercial market and what runs afoul of government terms and conditions, whether they're statutory or regulatory in nature. And as you are very well aware, probably more than you want to be, Roger, the whole business of enterprise user license agreements and GSA schedules has been a major issue for software providers over the last 4 years, where the government has consistently declined to accept commercial terms because of conflicts, real or
imagined.
I'll say it, Larry. With government law, and this situation has evolved over time. The nice thing about it was GSA came up with essentially a pass/fail list. The bad news is that they really subordinated the commercial terms to being the absolute lowest rung on the enforcement ladder. So anything else the government came up with in terms of what it thought was a conflict would take precedence. Now, though, GSA has come out with a proposed rule.
Proposed deviation.
To address enterprise user licensing agreements where there are conflicts. And while there may be some concerns about what is in that proposed deviation, the idea that GSA would actually consider a proposed deviation from the federal acquisition regulations, I think, is a step in the right direction.
Well, I agree with you, Larry. It is a step in the right direction. The devil is in the details about the terms, and I know there is some concern across industry about some of the terms that GSA is proposing. But, the approach is something I think people can appreciate as at least to try to clear the air and set expectations. Ultimately, I think we'll get down to, again, like it did previously, a negotiation between GSA and industry as to what this ends up looking like, because there are, frankly, some concerns about some of the proposed language. And, GSA at least has given folks the opportunity to submit those concerns and will consider them.
Well, certainly companies have to be concerned and have every right to protect their intellectual property, Roger. And while we joke about the fact that people may or may not read these things, there are people out there who do read these terms and conditions, and this is a competitive landscape in the commercial software world, and we want to be very careful, and GSA needs to be very careful that it's not inadvertently making releasable somebody's intellectual property in the name of a terms of service issue. So that's definitely a type of discussion that needs to be had. You know, on the surface, we can agree that trying to use more commercial terms for the acquisition of commercial services and products is a net good thing for government. But it's going, as you said, it's going to take an awful lot of individual negotiations, I think, to ensure that you have some clarity, you have ease of use, but you also have the protections you need.
Yeah. So, Larry, yeah, in terms, to your point, the terms and conditions and the, you know, intellectual property are obviously a vital concern. That's crown jewels of, you know, company. But you talk a lot to companies about protecting, you know, or reviewing, excuse me, their terms and conditions and the importance of really understanding what's in your contract. And that may sound like government contracts 101, but it is, you know, at the heart of success. Is that right?
That's exactly right, Roger. And you're right in saying, look, this could sound like a Homer Simpson moment, but the fact is that companies don't always read the terms and conditions of their contract, and they really need to. Look, you and I both know, we can talk about stories where companies that get a government contract on Monday and start selling on it on Tuesday are thrilled. They're particularly thrilled when the revenue starts coming in through that contract. But wait a minute, there's more. At some point, you're going to get a reviewer coming in from the government, GSA. You're going to get an industrial or an industry operations analyst coming to examine your compliance with different terms and conditions. And if you weren't too careful, for example, where you got your products from, you could find that you have a Trade Agreements Act violation. As number of people that we've known, particularly Deidre Lee when she was inside government, are fond of saying, with revenue comes responsibility. And so it is for government contractors, Roger. If you're going to be selling through a government contract, understand that even though you're selling commercial services and products, a federal contract is not the same as a commercial contract. At the most obvious level, your commercial business partners can't threaten to throw you in jail or fine you for three times the amount of the actual damages that might be incurred if you're in breach of your contract. Federal government can certainly do both of those things and a lot more. So while, hey, we're a small business, you're a small business, I'm a small business, I understand small businesses, we all survive on generating revenue. But my mantra in all of this, Roger, is selling to the government is not about how much money you make, it's about how much money you keep. And you have to make sure that you're in compliance with your contract in order to keep as much as you think you made.
Right. And that's, you know, I think one of the key areas there in the schedules environment, and I know you're pretty familiar, is the price, you know, compliance with the price reduction clause. Is that something that continues to be a challenge for?
Price reductions clause compliance is, Roger. You know, we talked about that briefly in terms of the proposed pilot that GSA has that would eliminate one of the two triggers, the basis of award trigger, but left intact, and certainly a case of action that I've seen lately in GSA enforcement has been the other price reductions clause trigger, which is defective data. Simply put, that is that the information companies submit up front to obtain their schedule contract, information on their commercial sales and pricing practices, their discount procedures, rebates, other things that affect their pricing, those disclosures have to be very robust. They have to be accurate, and accurate to within 2 weeks of contract award. And if they're not, then the first sale that you make through the schedules program can be deemed a false claim. And if you make 1,000 sales through that schedule contract, then you've made 1,000 false claims, which really only makes a couple
trouble, right?
That's right. Well, it really only makes a couple of people happy. One, it makes your outside counsel really happy because they can now send their children to private school on your dime. The second set of people that it makes happy is the GSAIG and the Department of Justice. Some prosecutor in the Department of Justice that's trying to make a name for his or herself and really move up the ladder is going to be delighted by the fact that you didn't make an accurate disclosure for your GSA schedules contract at the beginning. You don't want to be a rung in their career ladder. You want to make sure that you're paying attention and taking the time you need to make your disclosures robust. I always tell people in the classes we teach, disclose and explain, never not disclose.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, in just a final note, the proposed transactional data reporting maintains an ongoing obligation to update that CSP. So they haven't eliminated that burden, to your point.
No, right. And I think that's not something that's well understood. If your commercial sales practices change during the life of that contract, then that's a moment where you need to tell your contracting officer. Similarly, if you're going to be adding new product or changing the way you go to market.
Right. Right.
These are all things that have an impact.
Right. So, Larry, hey, we're at the end of the show. So I want to thank my guest today, Larry Allen. He's the president of Allen Federal Business Partners, and you've been listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
You've been listening to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Off the Shelf, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.